Hello, everybody. Welcome to Facebook Live on WFIU. This is a special Ask the Mayor we do every month with John Hamilton, but normally we don't do these live. We've been doing them live the last few months due to the coronavirus and the social justice and racism, and it just seems like we've gotten a good audience, so we're going to do it again this month. We do Jim Lineup from Columbus the first week, Duke Bennett from Terre Haute the second week, John Hamilton this week, and then we join Dax Norton down in Nashville. He's the municipal consultant for Nashville on the fourth week of the month. So as always, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for having us today.
Joe, it's nice to be with you and with anybody else connecting live. Good to see you.
So just about a week ago, you condemned three racially motivated incidents, you know, and you said each of us must do our part to assure justice for those harmed. Let's just start with what kind of came out yesterday, and that's the attorneys for the white men who are accused of attacking Vox Booker. And I assume, you know, you saw the report and everyone else did. They called it a false narrative, accusing Booker of the agitator. How as mayor now do you respond to the other side of the story coming out?
Well, Joe, I don't think it's surprising that in what I expect will be criminal case and probably civil litigation too, eventually that there's going to be some back and forth and disputing. I guess I would emphasize a couple things. One, we know, and I know, I saw the just awful racial epithets and physical attacks that happened near Lake Monroe. And those were a gut punch to me to see the video of that, of one of my residents going through that. So I know that that happened there. The second thing I know, and maybe this is most important, is that racism is very real, that structural racism persists in my community and across our country, and that racism is real among us too. And that's kind of the key point, is to remind us all the work we have still to do to remedy structural racism that's present in our criminal justice system, in our education system, our healthcare system, our housing system and economic system, all that needing attention as we also continue to try to bring justice in individual instances.
Now, I wanted to ask just about your relationship with Booker, because my first instance was when he brought a megaphone to the State of the City address a few years ago to protest the Lenco Bearcat. How has your relationship with Booker evolved to now?
Well, you know, the important thing is Vox Booker lives in Bloomington. He's a resident of my community. And anytime a resident of my community is subject to inappropriate treatment or violence, I care deeply. It's true that Vox Booker and I have crossed paths. We haven't always agreed on every municipal policy, but none of my residents agree on all municipal policies. And the key point here is Mr. Booker was terribly attacked on the weekend of July 4th. And I want to be sure that, like I will for every resident of mine, that they get justice. And I think it would be relevant to say I've been on a number of media appearances in the last 10 days. Mr. Booker himself would urge, don't just focus on what happened to me. Let's talk about racism and what it means. And that was, the racism was so evident in that tape. It's hard not to feel nauseated, but also, I hope, motivated to do some things about it.
Yeah, and that was something you and others, a state senator, also asking the governor and others to make changes in the way the DNR responds to incidents. Are you happy with the response you're getting back from that?
Well, I'd say it's too early to tell. Look, police organizations, law enforcement organizations, of course, before this event and this weekend have been under a lot of scrutiny and questioning, and that's very appropriate from our Bloomington Police Department and what we do. And we believe in transparency and accountability to the conservation officers of the Department of Natural Resources, to the Sheriff Department. And, you know, I've been in contact with a number of these law enforcement folks and the governor to urge that we do have transparency and accountability in this, making sure that any questions get answered, and that we do look going forward, reviewing the procedures and processes that that govern is critically important, something we believe in Bloomington, and it needs to be consistent throughout our community and country.
And just really quick, you don't have any timeline of the prosecution or that the prosecutor tends to wrap up investigations. That's not something that you're briefed on, right?
No, well, I'm in regular touch with our county prosecutor, Erica Oliphant. It's her decision once she gets the case, if you will, the investigation from the state officials. She will decide, and I think she will decide quite expeditiously about charges to be filed. It's already been 10 days, and I know she's urging that the state investigation be done, as all of us are, as expeditiously as it can be. It's frustrating to have to wait for the wheels of justice to turn. I'm confident they will turn, and Erica will move quickly, our prosecutor, when she gets the case finally from the state.
I wanted a little follow-up, too, on the racial profiling. As a former basketball player in Bloomington from a Lawrence County sheriff, though, I believe he lives in Bloomington, who says he did nothing wrong. And some of what our reporting was that they're saying the call to the police station or to the police officer was where the racial profiling was. So is it still racial profiling for that officer?
This happened just outside of the city limits of Bloomington, so it wasn't in our jurisdiction. Yes, it is racial profiling if a law enforcement officer receives a report from one citizen and proceeds in ways that they would not do if they were more sensitive to these issues. I spoke to the Lawrence County Sheriff, and we have a different view of this. I said, I don't want you to do that in my city. He did it just outside the city limits. But if an off-duty officer, and look, off-duty officers, they have jurisdiction wherever they are, and if there's an emergency and they get asked to help, of course they're going to step in and help as a trained law enforcement officer. But this was not an emergency. This was one individual saying, I saw this person looking into cars. Look, I believe we have to have better judgment from our law enforcement professionals than to step in to a young African-American man walking peaceably down the street and cause that kind of event. I've spoken to Mr. Davis's father, D. Davis. I've reached out to, and I haven't yet spoken to him. And, you know, those of you who saw the video, D. Davis was incredibly de-escalating and calm and responsive in that video. He doesn't have to be. He's a person walking down the street, and he de-escalated it, which is good, and we are appreciative of that, but he shouldn't have to de-escalate that. So that's an example of a misjudgment, in my view, by the law enforcement officer that can constitute racial profiling.
Let's touch upon the farmer's market. Marsha Veldman is leaving. She was the, director or coordinator of the farmer's market. What led her to leave her position?
Well, you'll have to ask Marsha directly about that. Marsha was the master of the market for many, many years. I'm really sorry to see her retire. I haven't spoken directly with her. But no doubt the stress of the market over the last two seasons has been very difficult for those involved in it, from Marsha to her colleagues and the Parks Department, as well as the Parks Board and others. So I do want to thank Marsha. She helped create the state's best farmers market and many award-winning seasons, and serving our community very, very well. It's obviously we're going through some evolution at the market as the community has responded and others. And I certainly wish Marsha all the best. She's an outstanding public servant who is so committed to listening to everyone and responding to everyone with a big heart and a good judgment about what we can and can't do in a public market like that.
Did it surprise you that she left?
I was disappointed. Marsha has given so much to the market. I would say I didn't know she was going to leave, but Marsha has spent a lot of time, and I guess she chose it was her time to to walk away from the market. And again, I wish her all the best. She's given so much to this city as a whole, and the market in particular.
You know, there's now a third market, Woolery, that opened this past weekend. And there's an interesting letter from another market, Peoples, to Woolery, expressing concerns that Woolery has not made a statement on how it stands against white supremacy. What do you think is an independent market? What kind of responsibility do they have in fighting racism?
Well, we all have responsibility in fighting racism. I mean, that's the short answer to that. This is a legacy in our country and our community that we all have a personal and direct obligation to address. We all need to be anti-racist. Let's be clear about that. Different institutions are going to respond in different ways, and I'm not going to suggest how each institution or person should. But I do believe we all have responsibility to speak out against racism and to be anti-racist. I certainly do that and feel I should do that as mayor. We've done that consistently since I've been mayor, and I'll continue to do that. And each of us needs to look inside and speak and rise to the occasion to help us overcome this legacy.
But I think a lot of some people that are watching this may be saying, or want to ask you then, why was the farmers market so controversial, and how come? And I already know your answer, because we've asked you this many times, but you know, it's that $500,000 question. Why is a white supremacist still able to be there at the market?
Well, in a way that's a simple question, but in a way it's a very complicated question. The simple question is that under the Constitution of the United States, I can't punish people for what they believe. That's a really important concept in our country, and I swear an oath to the Constitution, and I take it really seriously. I cannot punish people for odious beliefs. I can speak up, and I have consistently and regularly, to say that's a hateful and odious ideology that has no place in our community, and I want to do all I can to help us overcome it. The complicated part of that question is asking, why is a racist at the farmers market? Racism and racists are everywhere. All of us have inherent biases. We all need to work on that, whether we want to call that a racist, being racist or not. Racism is everywhere. It's in the soil of our country, and it's in the blood of our of all of us, the history and legacies of racism. So asking how do we get rid of a racist in this or that place is a very complicated and challenging question. It's a big one that's sent 20 million people to the streets in our country over the last few weeks, committed to digging into that question. But let's not pretend that's a simple one to answer. We have a lot of work to do in all the areas that we still, as a country, are not, we haven't solved our racist past.
All right, we're about halfway through our time. So let's move on to COVID-19, the coronavirus, you know, big tests coming up with public schools. And of course, thousands of students coming back to Bloomington, cases going up, although deaths have gone down, but are starting to creep up some. So we're getting a lot of questions in the newsroom. Are we going to be safe this August?
Well, that's a good question. We need to do all we can to protect safety. Monroe County is still in a good spot. We've done good work together as a community since March to really try to limit the spread of the disease and flatten the curve. And we've had some good results. As you indicate, there are some recent bumps in the curves going the wrong direction, particularly for 20 to 29-year-olds, kind of that young contingent. I've been a vocal advocate for mandatory masks for some weeks and for stricter restrictions, as we see two things. One, we know tens of thousands of students are going to be coming back to our community from all over the country. Two, we've seen around the country the real risk of resurgence. So I've been an advocate, and I expect, Joe, that we will see in the next week or so some substantial orders coming from county health that will apply to the whole county that will help us keep people safe. I've always been ready to do this as a city if the county doesn't move, but I really think it's better if we have a countywide approach, and I'm confident that that's coming quite shortly.
And I believe you're talking about the mandatory mask ordinance.
I expect we're going to see three things in some, I don't know the exact specifics, we're still talking about those, but yes, a requirement for mask wearing in most circumstances for most of us. We know that really helps. Second, tighter controls over commercial establishments where you might have a lot of people indoors close together. That's, you can particularly think about bars where you can have a real tight packing or a super spreader event. And then the third area I think we're going to probably see some work on is social gatherings, because those two we now know are really a source where the virus can erupt and move quickly, and we really need to stop that, particularly over the next 3 months. We don't want to have to move dramatically backwards over the next 3 or 4 months, and there's real risk of that, as we've seen across the country.
So
can I just add too, Joe, it doesn't need to be this way. We've seen stories around the world where countries did better, had better controls, better testing, more consistent messaging that got them through this virus much better than we have. It's been a shortfall, a failure of national government, national leadership. States have tried to pick it up, but they varied too much. And we now, the United States is a poster child for how not to deal with the coronavirus pandemic.
I think one of the questions is about mandatory masks aren't mandatory if no one is enforcing the rules. Other cities have these, and you know, we're also seeing some of those videos that go viral of someone trying to enforce a mask. Yeah. How will Monroe County, Bloomington enforce that?
Well, let's be realistic. What we're trying to do with all of these is play the averages. It's trying to reduce the risk of major outbreaks. No system is going to be perfect. But it's absolutely clear there are 21 or more states that have mandatory mask orders in place. They really make a difference. Compliance goes way up. Will there be issues of compliance? Sure, there will be. But most of the issues of compliance will be handled in establishments, in a business, at a drugstore, in a restaurant, or at a gym or other places where the owners of those establishments will need to assure that people comply. We're not going to have roving bands of mask checkers running through the parks, but the point is to significantly increase the percentage of us wearing masks in so many places. And I know our people have shown interest in doing this and doing it well. If there are individuals who refuse, then law enforcement mechanisms can respond to that. But the evidence around the country is that when these are put in place, these mask orders, the vast majority of us want to comply and want to help protect public safety.
And what about all the people that are so against wearing a mask? I just read this morning in Evansville about people protesting a maskless protest outside of City Hall before a decision was made on a mandatory mask. What's this force against wearing a mask?
Look, I think all I can say is that as public officials and then as community members, we need to follow the science and try to do the right thing to protect each other. There can be individuals who choose for various reasons not to do so, and we'll have to respond to that as a community. But I think the overall evidence and the overall inclination of our people is that if we indicate this is really important for our public health, we know now masks dramatically help reducing the spread. So that's what we're going to do locally. And you need to be part of that solution. It's not political. It's not personal. It's based on health and science. And that's where we'll keep focused.
Quick follow-up on that. If people don't have access to masks, is there somewhere they can go? And this is even in general, too, to go get a mask.
Yes, any mandatory mask order will, the general expectation is that people will supply their own masks. So that's what we're hoping for and expecting. But for those who can't or have difficulty obtaining masks, we've had tens of thousands of masks produced by volunteers. We have stores of the personal protective equipment like masks that we can make available for folks. And we'll help people comply who have trouble complying.
We have a few questions of people sent in. Of course, it's Ask the Mayor. So let's start with Cindy. She says, we are planning a trip to drive to Brownsburg, Indiana at the end of July, coming from Colorado, coming through Bloomington. Is it safe? Is it safe to stay at a hotel?
Well, I good luck on your trip. That's a long travel. Yes, I think it's generally safe. Take precautions. It depends what your own risk factors are, of course, as an individual. If you have risk factors, you need to be particularly careful of that. I would ask the hotels what kind of protocols they have. I think it's always good as a customer and a health consumer these days to ask institutions like the hotel, what's your protocol? How do you clean? How do you handle? Do you assume everybody has the virus? And do you have masks when you're at people coming in and out of the elevators and that kind of thing? But I think with prudent care, people are traveling again, but you have to be very careful. I wouldn't do it willy-nilly just for the heck of it, but there are certainly ways to protect yourself.
You kind of touched on this. This email is concerned about IU students returning, COVID dangers they bring with them. But the question is, can our healthcare system handle that influx of the IU students returning?
Well, all we're doing is to try to help make sure that is the case. We certainly had all those students here in March when the outbreak started, and our health system helped manage it. Of course, some of them did leave. It is important. IU has announced that they're going to require every returning student have a negative COVID test in the days before they come back, and that will help identify those who bring an immediate threat. But I think we can expect we'll see more cases in the days and weeks when students are back. And that's one of the reasons we don't want to have super spreader events that we're able to manage and control what will certainly be some disease, COVID-19 here. Our healthcare system is well positioned, and they're very careful to try to make sure we have the resources of beds, equipment, ventilators if needed, tracing and testing that we need. We don't have the testing we need. Let's be clear about that. We're way behind on that. But in terms of hospital beds, I think the medical profession works really hard to make sure we've got the capacity.
This email, I would like to know if the two Bloomington firemen testing positive were potentially exposed at the recent BLM movements or protests.
The two firefighters that were exposed, it appears to have been not work related at all. And it's interesting, actually. There's not much evidence that suggests that outdoor masked major march produced a big surge of cases. With the contact tracing that I've seen, it didn't suggest that was a problem. The firefighters both appear to have gotten infected in their home life, personal lives. And then we were very glad it doesn't seem to have spread to any other firefighters. Though I will note today we announced a utility department worker was our sixth employee to be identified as having had COVID. So we're wishing them well. So far, all have had a full recovery.
The follow-up to that was that, would allowing protesters on top of each other, is that part of the resurgence of COVID?
It does not appear to be. I want to give credit. The organizers of that march back on June 5th were very explicit and careful, provided masks. I saw the march from a distance. I didn't get in the middle of the throng, but I was there on the edges. And it seemed to me 90% or more people were masked. So far as I know from our health experts, there does not seem to be an eruption or a resurgence from that event, which now is well over a month ago, so we should have seen it by now. Instead, it seems to be other social events where people are close together, particularly indoors, non-masked, that we're starting to see some spread. I heard of a pool party at one major apartment house that produced some, and some other concerns like that.
Last question, parking meters, are they still free? Is it for 2 hours downtown?
Parking meters are still free for 2 hours in Bloomington. We set that policy as the COVID emergency hit, and we wanted to help merchants who were doing drive, drop-off, pickup for food and stuff. But as people are starting to use parking meters to go out to eat, either indoors or outdoors, I expect we will review that policy. We haven't announced it yet, but I expect pretty soon we'll go back to the regular meter policy to help create the turnover in those spaces that we'll need probably particularly before students all come back.
All right, we're out of time, but as always, I'd like to have the mayor give the last word. Do you have any announcements or anything you'd like everyone to know?
No, I don't, Joe. It's been an unbelievable first 6 months of 2020. I'll be giving a speech about that on Thursday this week if people want to listen into that, trying to talk about how we go forward. I do appreciate everybody taking care of each other and taking care of our community. These are unusual and stressful times, and I appreciate the chance to help answer questions about them.
All right. Thank you very much, and hope to see you next month.
Thanks, Joe. Be well. Take care.
Okay.